Welcome to Box Office Ba-Bombs. If a movie is based on a video game, chances are it's going to blow. Across the aisle from me is a man whose critical input is often as incoherent and unwelcome as the sequel we're here to talk about today, Dylan Flynn.
And across the aisle from me, a man whose mom is so ugly that when she fought Scorpion, he said, "Stay over there."
Oh, that's a classic one.
Mr. Trevor Ickrath, taking it back to the schoolyard.
That's right, yeah. I gotta say, I was a little afraid we weren't gonna see Scorpion this week. That was kind of one of my chief fears when I sat down to watch this movie. If only I had known, I had so much more to worry about.
When you sit down to watch a movie, do you typically take a small inventory of your fears?
Well, I typically weigh whether or not I'm going to see Scorpion from Mortal Kombat in it, and then I'll kind of right. decide ahead of time how likely I am to enjoy the movie.
Sitting down to watch Killers of the Flower Moon, probably not going to see Scorpion. Sitting down to watch Mortal Kombat Annihilation, not sure.
But, you know, we found out a lot about this movie, and we're here to talk about it today.
That's right. Let's talk about the sequel to the 1995 Mortal Kombat film, 1997's Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
It took 6 days to create the Earth. It will take 6 more to destroy it.
Did God really create the Earth and all of creation in just 6 ordinary days only thousands of years ago? Looking for answers about what the Bible teaches about creation, the fossil record, dinosaurs? Download
Mortal Kombat Annihilation, rated PG-13.
Right, a sequel to a movie that everybody loved working on so much that they all just could not stop themselves from coming back, putting in the effort for the sequel, making sure that it's a coherent vision that matches up with the first movie. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, they really knocked it out of the park in those regards. Wait, no, that's a completely different movie than the one that we watched for this podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, the one we watched was released by New Line Cinemas on November 21st, 1997, and is based on the story of Mortal Kombat 3 and features the roster of Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, both published for the arcade by Midway in 1995.
I really cannot distinguish between any of these early Mortal Kombat games, at least, you know, any Mortal Kombat game, really, but in particular, the first couple all have always looked about the same to me, but this movie did kind of get my memory jarred, like, oh yeah, at a certain point, they started adding in robots to this thing.
Robots definitely are a hallmark of being 3 entries into the Mortal Kombat series, I agree.
Who wants to play as a robot in Mortal Kombat when you got, like, a giant with 4 arms or, like, some dude decked out in skull armor? Who wants to play as a simple robot, I ask you?
Yeah, the worst is playing against a robot, because you know you're not going to be ripping out a spine or seeing any cool blood fatalities. He's a fucking robot.
Circuit boards? That's not gonna scratch the itch. No way.
I'm a budding child psychopath. Give me something I can sink my teeth into.
Well, maybe you could sink your teeth into some of the behind-the-scenes facts from this movie. For instance, did you know that it cost $30 million to produce and earned a whole $51.3 million internationally?
On paper, you think, okay, well, they made the budget back, but that's not how it works, right? Because you got to spend money on marketing and on distribution. So if you use the classic rule of thumb, 2.5 times the budget would be $75 million to break even. So this did lose money.
That's movie math.
Also, it cost $10 million more to make than Mortal Kombat 1, which is a little bit befuddling to me.
I can only imagine that, like, a lot of that money did not really make it onto the screen and was just kind of, like, wasted and stuff that they ended up having to either throw away or just didn't finish. Not only did it lose money, though, it also lost screens compared to the first installment. It opened on 2,140 screens, which is down 281 screens from Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah, so I guess distributors were already, maybe the writing was a little bit on the wall, right?
Yeah, they could taste the blood in the water.
It was the feature directorial debut of John R. Leonetti, who had previously been the cinematographer on the first Mortal Kombat movie. And this is a move that this guy is continuing to do to this day in his career, where he'll be a cinematographer for somebody, and then, you know, a movie in their kind of legendarium that they don't want to make, they'll have him direct. So, like, he did a bunch of James Wan movies. He did, like, Insidious and The Conjuring, and then James Wan was like, I don't want to direct Annabelle. Hey, John R. Leonetti, you direct Annabelle.
You hang around a Hollywood set long enough, somebody will ask you to direct a movie, I guess. I think that's how it works. This might be some interest to gamers. It is of no interest to me, but series co-creator John Tobias also received a story by credit.
I have some fondness for John Tobias and Ed Boon. I think they're interesting dudes, and I like I don't know which one of them pops up and goes toasty in those games. It might be neither of them. It might be some other guy, but I like those boys.
I mean, they've definitely left a huge mark on the fighting game industry, you know?
You know what didn't leave a huge mark on me? The story of this movie. So maybe you can tell it for me again with a little bit of juice, a little bit of vivre.
Sure.
And I'll feel like I'm really understanding it better.
Having lost the Mortal Kombat tournament, the unsportsmanlike Emperor Shao Kahn decides to break the rules and invade Earthrealm anyway. The heroes have 6 days to defeat him, or Earth will merge with Outworld and the human race will be annihilated. So, like, my chief question here, did the first movie just not fucking matter? Like, why even bother doing the whole Mortal Kombat thing if we're just going to invade Earth anyway? You know, we could have just skipped to this movie.
There's even a moment when Liu Kang is, like, trying to boast his credentials. Like, you forget I won Mortal Kombat, and then the other character's like, so?
Fat load of good it did us. You know, we're still here. Thanks, Liu Kang.
Speaking of Liu Kang and the gang, let's talk about these characters. Blaze through them if we can. We already mentioned him.
Yeah, Liu Kang played by, again, one of the only returning actors to this cast, Robin Chow.
Yeah, it's weird, too, because not only, I didn't catch this the first time around, not only is he the actor who plays Liu Kang, he also is the fight choreographer in the first movie and in this movie.
Oh, okay. So, you know, maybe he was a little more invested than everybody else.
I guess so. He wanted to see a certain level of quality that the other personnel didn't give a shit about. Then you got the other returning cast member, Princess Kitana, the daughter of the powerful Outworld royalty figures and the key to stopping Shao Kahn's plan. Or is she? Played by Talisa Soto.
Right. Our first big replacement, though, comes in the form of James Remar, who is now playing Raiden, the Thunder God who will sacrifice anything to save humankind. You put a little note here that he played Dexter's dad on Dexter. Were you a Dexter guy?
That's right. I immediately pegged him for that. I'm like, oh, that's Dexter's dad. What a weird person to be in this movie.
The only thing I know about that show was that the ending was terrible. I wonder if it's worse than this movie. We've got Sonya Blade again, Special Forces agent who struggles to be a team player, played by Sandra Hess. I really feel like they kind of... I don't know. She was one of the characters who felt like she got a little more whittled down.
I think this lady, Sandra Hess, she's like Scandinavian or something, but she definitely does not have much screen presence. Although I do think, for what it's worth, she looks a little bit more like Sonya Blade's sprite from the games.
I mean, the costume felt a little more recognizable this time around, I think. So we've also got Sonya's partner here. He's got a big pair of cybernetic arms. His name is Jax, and he's played by Lynn Red Williams. This guy kind of seemed like the only one in the movie who was kind of having a good time with it.
Well, they certainly took all of Johnny Cage's quips and gave it to this guy. I didn't put it here, but his big credit is that he was a huge sensation on American Gladiators. So that's where he came from.
Nice.
It is curious to me that you've got a guy from American Gladiators in your movie and he's not one of the ones you put inside of a giant metal ball and roll around.
Sure, that seems like an obvious pick. Yeah, I didn't even put that together. You didn't even put Johnny Cage here in the cast list, I guess because he's killed off in the first, like, 3 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, what are they doing killing Johnny Cage?
I mean, you do have a very large cast of characters that you need to juggle here. I just don't know if Johnny Cage is the cut that I would make. Let's keep going, though. We're down to the bad guys now. We've got Big Man himself, Shao Kahn, the tyrannical Emperor of Outworld, played by Brian Thompson.
This guy's got a weird mouth and a weird jaw.
I was debating talking more about Shao Kahn in my tier list. I don't think I'm going to be doing it, but for my money, this guy had to have been the worst villain we've seen in one of these movies yet, which was kind of a big letdown for me, because one of the key things I've always taken away from the Mortal Kombat franchise, not really having engaged with the games in any meaningful way, is how cool Shao Kahn looks as a villain. He's basically like Shredder from Ninja Turtles, if you made him, like, you know, a little more Indiana Jones core goth. But man, the depiction of him here, I don't know if this is true to the game, but like, he seems like a low-rent Vin Diesel who's kind of always getting yelled at by his dad.
I know, the thing that they really fuck it up by making him constantly emasculated by his more powerful father.
They turned him into a fail son.
I would also argue that it's not that hard to make Shao Kahn cool in a movie. You just need a better mask than they gave him and to have him keep wearing it. He's supposed to be like Darth Vader.
Speaking of the guy, Shinnok, Shao Kahn's father and the elder god of death, played by Reiner Schoen.
Who gives a shit about this character, right? I mean, if he was, like, really playing up that he was a scary death god, maybe.
This is a movie about parents, though, you know? Because we've also got Queen Sindel, Kitana's resurrected mother, played by Musata Vander.
She's got a fun kind of Rita Repulsa, over-the-top cackle thing going on, I think.
Yeah, she's a little, like, cunty, as the kids say these days.
Sure, she's serving major cunt, as the kids often say.
Even more cunt being served, probably, by Jade, a femme fatale and double agent, played by Irina Panteva.
I thought that this character was a little bit more interesting in her costuming, in her fighting, in her very weird accent and strange haircut. In a movie where many things were washing over me, I kind of noticed Irina Panteva a little bit more.
Sure. This is a movie where a lot of characters just kind of show up.
They sure do.
Her character is one who just kind of shows up.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even stay around very long. Case in point, we've got Nightwolf, a Native American animorph, played by Lightfoot. Is just one single name for this guy, Lightfoot?
Yeah, I think they went ahead and cast, like, you know, an actual member of a tribe, which is always nice.
This was one of the crazier elements of the movie to me, though, because, so at one point, Liu Kang goes to this Native American fighter guy, Nightwolf, to, like, learn the ways of the Force, basically. And Nightwolf is like, I will give you 3 tests, and then, like, you know, the powers will be, like, revealed to you. And we get 2 tests, and then there's never a 3rd test, and it's never again referenced, and Nightwolf never comes back.
They could have changed that line of dialogue. They could have looped it.
Yep. 2 tests.
There is a really funny line, too, when he, like, sneaks up on Liu Kang as a part wolf and, like, attacks him briefly, and then they struggle and then break apart, and he goes, pretty cool, huh? It's my animality.
Great. Then finally, we've got kind of like a rogues gallery, a who's who of, like, second tier villains here that we can just kind of run through.
Yeah.
We've got Motaro, who is a centaur, but he's kind of a fucked up centaur with a big scorpion tail.
That's right.
We've got Shiva, a four-armed lady who talks to me and talk, but she is kind of squished like a bug in 5 seconds.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, walks into a room, immediately killed.
Yeah. Sub-Zero, this is not the Sub-Zero from the last movie who you will remember died, but this is his brother. I think that is actually real Mortal Kombat shit, right? Like,
yeah.
Sub-Zero's brother becomes Sub-Zero at one point. If you were as afraid as I was that you weren't going to see him in this movie, have no fear, because Scorpion does pop back up for a single scene.
Yep.
He's never again addressed in the film. He just pops back up, grabs Kitana, right?
Yeah, and damsels her away. I mean, talk about, like, paper-thin fan service to get the boys in there.
We've got Rain, a purple ninja. We've got Ermac, a red ninja. We've got... Who's this guy? Noob Saibot.
Noob Saibot.
That's a George Lucas-ass name.
I'm excited to tell you that Noob Saibot is Tobias and Boone backwards because of John Tobias and Scott Boone.
Brilliant. That's great. Melina, a pink ninja. And then we've got Smoke and Cyrax, a gray and yellow robot, respectively.
Boy, those guys, they sure are there, aren't they?
So let's talk about the movie's critical reception, why don't we?
Sure. On Rotten Tomatoes, it received a stellar 4% critic score and a surprisingly generous 24% user score. Definitely the lowest critic score we've had so far, but I think Street Fight had a 20% user score. So according to Rotten Tomato users, this movie better than Street Fighter.
I thought this movie made Street Fighter look like Shakespeare.
What did other critics think, Trevor?
Bob Heisler of the LA Times said, more than a few hands will reach for a joystick to get more involved. But alas, this is not a game. It's barely a movie.
Did you reach for your joystick while you were watching Mortal
Kombat? I waited till after it was done. And then I rewound to the mud fight scene. Rotten Tomatoes user Angel L says, I think a movie... these are always such a joy. I think a movie is all right. Animality is kind of scary, but I know this movie ruined actors and actresses' careers. Well, I have an opinion on Liu Kang. He's sexy.
I like showing up for Robin Shu with a little bit of a lustful eye, you know?
Sure. He still looked great. He looked great in both movies.
So let's talk trivia. It seems like whenever these movies get bad enough, the trivia all becomes kind of fallout of the people involved being embarrassed to have been involved.
Case in point, in separate interviews, Mortal Kombat creators Ed Boon and John Tobias both called the movie the worst experience they've ever had involving Mortal Kombat.
And that's decades they've spent on the franchise, right?
Producer Lawrence Kasanoff lamented that the film was released in an unfinished state, which I thought was really obvious watching it.
Yeah, for sure.
He said, "I'm telling you, the effects in that movie are not the final effects. I never anticipated that someone would take the movie and go, it's good enough. We weren't done. We never finished that movie. But the studio said, we don't care. We sacrificed quality for business."
Studio fuckery, right?
But yeah, this movie looked really bad.
Oh my God.
Shocked by how bad it looked. Like, from the opening scene, like, really bad green screen work, I think. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, within seconds, you're like, what in the fuck is going on here? Somebody else who was mystified by it all, Mortal Kombat 95 director Paul W.S. Anderson, later expressed regret that he passed on directing the film. And he actually said that Mortal Kombat Annihilation's failure kind of inspired him to stay on directing those Resident Evil sequels because, in his words, "Once your name is attached to a franchise, you'll always feel partly responsible. It's better to stick things out through thick and thin."
Yeah, where were you, Paul?
He was directing Event Horizon is what he was doing, which I actually think is kind of a good movie. Some people really hate it, but it's got like a fun body horror, sci-fi nightmare shit going on.
Yeah, I've never seen Event Horizon. It's kind of on the list of like sci-fi movies I should get around to, but I can only imagine it's way better than this.
It's easily better than Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Yeah, that's the bar.
Like, you know, to sum up, this movie is ranked as the 46th worst movie of all time by Business Insider, the 93rd lowest rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes, the 70th lowest rated movie on IMDb, the second lowest rated movie of the 90s on Letterboxd, and the worst movie of the 90s on WatchMojo.
So some credential for sure.
Yeah, none of them good, you know?
I would be pressed to think of a major studio released movie from the 1990s that I would like immediately say is worse than this.
I can't pick one up off the top of my head. I mean, I feel like the average episode of like Power Rangers has like better production values and writing and cinematography than this movie.
Typically, on the show, this is where we would sort of ask each other about our experiences with this franchise, but we've already done that. I was kind of thinking maybe I could just talk about playing Mortal Kombat 2 here, though.
Sure, yeah.
So last week, Frankie Frayn was on the show, and he did mention that Mortal Kombat 2 is way harder. I kind of wish Frankie was here today, because I would love to hear his perspective as a child of the 90s, like, super into this franchise, probably going to see this movie day one. Like, what the fuck?
I've been having nightmares where we have a guest on this episode, and he turns out to be somebody who, like, really has, like, a lot of childhood nostalgia for Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh,
and
boy.
My non-confrontational ass is like, yeah, you know, I do understand why somebody like who liked this movie as a kid would still have a lot of like, you know, warm feelings for it.
You get steamrolled by the fucking fandom dick sucking. I'm pretty sure Frankie Frayn thinks that this thing's an abomination though.
Sure.
I played Mortal Kombat 2. I agree with Frankie, too hard. It took me forever to beat the first fucking match against Scorpion. Like, I was just trying to figure out what my low kick was, and he was fucking stun locking me and one touch comboing me until I was fucking dead.
Damn.
When arcade games get that hard, it feels like one of two things have happened. One is greed.
We need those quarters.
It's 25 cents a minute, no matter what. Or the other thing that can happen is that the studio got too good at their game and are bad at balancing it now. I heard 3 backs off a little bit on the difficulty. But I did have some success with a character who is, I guess, in this movie, Baraka. He appears very briefly.
Oh, is he that guy with, like, the knives in his hands or something?
He's the guy with the fucking spirit Halloween mask with the big teeth who attacks them when he tries to rescue Kitana.
Okay.
He had, like, good enough reach that I was able to stay away from Scorpion long enough.
Yeah.
As he tried to make me get over here to beat him. But then, like, immediately I started dying on the second match, and I was like, fuck this and fuck you. So that's the end of Mortal Kombat for me for now.
But let's get into our tier list, why don't we?
Yeah, let's discuss things that didn't work, and I guess perhaps things that did work about Mortal Kombat Annihilation. You begin us this week with the F tier. What's the worst thing about this movie? I've been interested to hear where you came down.
Well, you know, I debated a long time about what I was going to put in my F tier. Certainly, this movie has no shortages of things that are ripe for the picking.
Yeah.
When it comes to this category. I ultimately wound up going with just like the casual misogyny that pops up few times. You know, like, we've watched like 4 or 5 of these things now. We haven't seen too much of this kind of thing, with the exception of a few you know, lingering shots on like a female actress or something.
Yeah, or some damsel, third act damsels, things like that.
Like even when Sonya Blade was captured and put in like a little dress in the climax of the previous movie, it wasn't like a Slave Leia situation, you know, which it easily could have become.
But yeah, it's been limited to the occasional piggish comment from Jean-Claude Van Damme so far.
And that guy, you know, I imagine he barely knew what he was saying in that movie, you know, between English not being his first language and all the cocaine use that was going on.
Yeah, he's a guy who says something really shitty to your wife, and then like his buddy leans over, like, he's European. That's different over there.
That's a compliment where he comes from. But yeah, in this movie, like, not only do we have this infamous mud fight scene between two of the female characters,
Melina and Sonya Blade. How could you forget Melina, the pink ninja?
Right. But even it pops up in like the weirdest places too, like when Raiden of all characters first meets Jade, I think, right? He's like,
right,
nice legs. Can they kick as good as they look or something?
You're like a thunder god. What are you doing?
Exactly. Like this character, you're telling me this character, this immortal thunder god, is like, hey, nice pair of legs. That's like, you wouldn't have gotten that from the Highlander guy for sure.
No, for sure not.
Yeah.
Although if he had, and then he'd been like, hey, sorry, it would have been kind of funny.
He would have apologized immediately. Yeah. So that stuck in my craw. There was also that moment after the mud fight scene where Jax, Sonya's partner of years, people who I imagine are like very like professional friends and have seen each other like through thick and thin. He's like, well, I gotta admit, you do look good in mud.
Yeah, that's so fucked up.
Not something you say to your friend or like someone you're working with on in a professional basis, you know? So yeah, F tier, just the casual misogyny in this movie.
Into the D tier. I'm going to put this film's complete absence of story structure into the D tier, Trevor. What would you say if I asked you point blank, the first act of Mortal Kombat Annihilation entails? When does it end and what does it cover?
Probably, I would have to say the first act, definitely, you know, the opening scene where Shao Kahn shows up, kills Johnny Cage. What happens immediately after that?
Raiden explains that they're invading.
If I were to, like, you know, cut it up DVD menu style into three acts, the first act would probably end after Katana is kidnapped by Scorpion.
You could argue that it ends as soon as Raiden explains that they're invading.
Yeah.
And I guess act three is when they get to Outworld, but like half the movie is in Outworld and most of the character development is just so shapeless, you know? Like last week, I know I criticized that reptile fight for feeling like it was a very stakesless, shoved-in fight. And this movie just feels like a feature-length adaptation of that pattern. You know, characters are, they're marching along towards very vague goals, and then they get intercepted and ambushed by some bad guy who I don't know who they are. They fight for 2 minutes, like the good guy wins, and then another group of bad guys show up and they run away.
Yeah.
And the other thing we touch on, it, the whole premise here of it being predicated on the idea that the story of Mortal Kombat 95 was totally meaningless and that the heroes accomplished nothing, is like, makes me feel like I can't get my hands into the finger holds of this movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's also frustrating that this time we get this MacGuffin in the form of Princess Katana, and they're like, if we rescue her, that's what stops the bad guy's plan. And then they do it, and you get this really arbitrary, oh, nope, that was not true, actually. You really just have to go fight the bad guy.
Yeah.
There's nothing to sink your teeth into here. They even try to make, like, a big deal about it in the third act confrontation when the gods show up, and they're like, enough of you bad guys. Now we'll decide the fate of the realm the real way by having Mortal Kombat. But when they do that, the fight has already been going on for 2 minutes, and the result of them doing that is that the fight just continues.
Yeah.
So it just feels like this script is going nowhere, and it's constantly slogging shapelessly from one event to another, which really was probably the thing that wore me down the most.
I really like would not even need a very particularly strong script for a Mortal Kombat movie, so long as it was providing me with like some other stuff to really latch on to, like say some really good fight sequences. But even those I feel like are really lacking here. A big step down from the action of the first one. So yeah, you're really kind of just left with the plot, and there just isn't one in this movie. Characters enter and exit at will. Nobody really has like a very like strong motivation for doing what they're doing.
It kind of shows you how far it went in the first one, just having a tournament as a thing to kind of organize the story around.
Yeah.
Let's go into the C tier. You're picking it.
Sure. This one's pretty easy, pretty cut and dry. I've chosen Sonya Blade covered in mud. Like, it's been too long, I think. Like, we've seen like 4 or 5 of these movies. Give the fellas a little something, you know, to enjoy, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, sure, the gamers are getting their kicks, pun intended in this case. But, you know, I want to see some TNA. It was the 90s. It was a different time. You were allowed to get away with a little more. And here, you know, I think they seized an opportunity. And we got some just good, classic, objectification.
And I think steered by the sexual appetites of Howard Stern, mud wrestling was a huge thing in the 90s, too. You
know? Oh, yeah. I mean, like, if I think about, like, stupid dudes from the 90s and, like, what's going to get them off, yeah, women covered in mud, for sure.
And you have to imagine that it's, like, very quickly followed by a little person running out and then everybody laughing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I love how this has worked out, Trevor, because here in the B tier, I feel like my picks are very connected to both your F and your C tier pick.
Okay.
I knew that I had picked the right thing to put in the B tier this week because when it occurred to me, my first reaction was, I can't say that on my podcast. I'll be ashamed if I do. I'm picking Sonya Blade actress Sandra Hess's breasts to put into the B tier. You know, in Bridget Wilson, in the first Mortal Kombat movie, she wore, like, tactical gear and maybe some black turtleneck. She looked like a Special Forces agent.
Sure.
But they really pivoted this time. They put her in a very thin, sleeveless white T-shirt with no bra, and her nipples are essentially protruding for the entire runtime of the film.
Yeah.
I think philosophically, this is probably not a good thing, because obviously this movie is made for children, and Sonya is the strongest female character in the film. So, you know, overtly sexualizing her probably has a negative impact on, like, formative minds.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is just such a miserable thing to sit through, and it's so assaultively visually unpleasant that I have to be honest to my experience and just be like, seeing boobs on the screen was a little oasis for me.
You just need something to get you through, you know?
This is not as objectively bad looking as everything else that's in this frame. How about that?
I like to picture maybe, like, I don't know, either the director or maybe more specifically the costume designer just fielding kind of like a round table of questions, and one being like, tell us about some of the decisions you made for the Sonya Blade character. And then being like, oh yeah, well, actually, I'll never forget this first day on set. We had a breakthrough moment where we realized we should be having her wear a shirt that was one size too small for her body. And then, like, all the people asking questions just ducking down their heads and just furiously taking notes, like, oh.
I don't know if you caught this, but there are a number of one-shots of that actress in the movie, like when she's in conversation, you do close-up inserts where the camera, the shot, like, begins just above the nipple line. And you have to imagine, like, oh, they cropped this in post because it was, like, too ridiculous what was happening with those nipples in this shot.
Shameful. And a real kind of a low watermark for the podcast so far. But hey, let's soldier on.
Let's go to some high watermarks. What do you put into the A tier when you're talking about Mortal Kombat Annihilation? And did you have a harder time doing these top tiers as I did?
No, because I found the movie, like, as bad as it was, quite gracefully, like, delivered me my highest tiered pick on a silver platter. It was the one moment of the movie I enjoyed, and I enjoyed it so much that I had to rewind it. It's the final moments of that ridiculous scene where Scorpion appears out of nowhere, back from the grave, kidnaps Kitana. He's about to abscond with her through a portal or something, and he just screams in the Scorpion voice, "Suckers!" So yeah, my A-tier pick is Scorpion screaming suckers as he kidnaps Kitana and teleports away.
Ed Boon really holding it down when he's playing Scorpion, isn't he?
Has he ever said that in the game?
I don't think so. I think it's come here, get over here, and that's about it.
What are some other funny things that would be funny to hear Scorpion say? Like, who is that? Who is that pop star or other celebrity who, like, had that story come out about them where it was like, when they're hungry, they will just tell their chauffeur "Hungies." Like, imagine Scorpion just screaming like, "Hungies, I've been trying to reach you regarding your car's extended warranty. This is Scorpion from Sweetwater. We're just calling to see if you're enjoying the XLR cables you purchased."
Oh boy, I feel so dubiously honored to be responsible for the S tier this week, Trevor.
I'm very curious to see what you selected for this one because it couldn't have been an easy task.
I'm picking the moment where Jax rips off his own cybernetic arm during his final confrontation against Motaro the Centaur.
Yep.
For one, it feels like the only moment in the entire movie where a character's arc has like been explicitly set up and is now being paid off.
Sure. Yeah.
Raiden tells Jax, like, you know, your arms don't give you that strength. So I'm already perking up when I see him suddenly in a position where his arms are in question. I'm like, oh, storytelling? Is that what's happening here? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to believe that I am saying this because I think for the most part, this guy seems like he's been reading his lines very badly off cue cards. But I think it's a really powerful piece of nonverbal acting from Lin Red Williams. The way that he kind of like, he's being mocked by Motaro because Motaro, like, damaged one of his arms. He's like,
yeah.
No, I'm going to kill you. You can't do anything. His fancy arms are all fucked up. And he looks down. He looks kind of ashamed at first and, like, a little scared. And then, like, you see his brow tighten as he finds some kind of inner resolve. And, you know, he pulls something from deep within to become victorious. You know, it to me, it's an easy S-tier pick. It's genuinely the only moment in the movie where I feel like the filmmaking is functioning here. I felt something stirring in me that I did not feel the rest of the film. It comes together in performance and storytelling in a way that the rest of the movie just doesn't. Also, those arms are really gross to look at, so I'm glad he ripped them off.
I was surprised when he did rip them off because I thought those were just his arms from that point on. Like,
yeah, apparently they were just like sleeves?
Yeah, like, I that's like, so what that he's ripping them off? He's just going back to his normal arms.
It's so weird, too, when Sonya like first finds him in whatever. The
classic example of how wacky this script is. I gotta go find my old partner, buddy, so he can help us with the fight. He just happens to be going through this extremely sci-fi surgery where he's having like prosthetic metal sleeves grafted onto his arms.
And then she has this insane line when she finds it where she goes, what the hell have you done to yourself this time?
Yeah, it's like, oh, he's always up to something.
Always giving himself cybernetic augmentations, that partner of mine.
What other extremities of this guy have been encased in steel?
It is time for getting into our ratings. Let's do it.
Starting off with graphics, you know, this category judges the overall artistic quality of sprites, animation, and background scenery in the movie. We just kind of like, you know, we use the GamePro game rating system, we should probably say, from the 90s.
We've adapted it to talk about cinema, so.
Yeah. So graphics, how'd you feel about this movie's graphics? I know I did not like them.
I think it's one of the most ugly looking films I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, this was not a tough call for me. First time, I think I'm going to go to one of the very extreme ends of this scale. I'm going to give the graphics a 1.
Just so you know, you can't go any lower in the Game Pro.
Right.
We can't give it zeros and 0.5s. Yeah, the unfinished special effects, the CGI monsters look even worse than Reptile did in 95, those fucking gargoyles.
Yeah, hard to believe it could have gotten worse, but they found a way.
Constantly awful-looking composite and blue screen shots. Very bad editing. It always feels like we're shoving reaction shots in there where, like, the character eyelines are not matching the action they're supposed to be watching. And,
yeah,
you know, the practical effects are also ridiculous. We mentioned Baraka. He wears like a real spirit Halloween-ass mask in this movie. Such a step down from that Goro stuff.
Yeah.
And Shao Kahn, his mask also looks cheap and shitty. 1.0, I got to go with you. This is the bottom of the barrel for sure for graphics.
So what do you think about sound this time around? Because I feel like we were both pretty hot on the sound in the last movie. And I feel like they didn't necessarily do a lot to change up the formula, but also they didn't do anything to make things better. So I do kind of feel like I need to dock it points for that. I'm not going to judge too harshly here. I'm going to stick with just like a 2 on this one.
Yeah, I feel like if we didn't have Mortal Kombat 1 to compare it with, this might be scoring a little higher for me. There's a little bit more like butt rock guitar in the score this time around, which I'm not super into.
Yeah.
You know, Techno Syndrome over the New Line Cinema's logo, it still hits.
Yeah.
Here's a place to talk about this. Robin Shu's Liu Kang performance in this one seems so much whinier to me. Well, for one, he's not a native English speaker, and they're asking a lot more of him in the script. But he's always sounding like I want to fight Shao Kahn, but I don't know if I can.
I get it. I mean, if I were this dude, I would be really fucking pissed at this point, you know? My brother's dead. I conquered an entire, like, supernatural tournament.
I won Mortal Kombat.
He won the tournament, and now he has to go through an entire shitty sequel of content on top of all that, so.
I guess I'll go all the way up to a 2.5 just for the Immortal Techno Syndrome over it all, but obviously a step down.
So next up, we've got Control. We kind of use this as a category to gauge how much this actually feels like a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Is it me, or did this feel less like a video game than the first Mortal Kombat movie?
Yeah, I think getting rid of the tournament element really hurts the video gaminess of it.
I also didn't notice any scenes where they were like trying to shoot it specifically like a fighting game, which was kind of a little disappointing for me because I did really enjoy how much that was featured in the first one.
If anything, more than an adaptation of a video game, Trevor, this script feels more like the screenwriters were watching like me and my friends pretending to be Mortal Kombat characters at recess, like over a number of weeks of recesses, taking very careful notes, you know, like, oh, okay, so she was a bad guy, but then she said she was a good guy, but then later it turned out she was a bad guy. Okay, let's do that. And then like, the good guys won, but the bad guys are saying, nah, we're going to invade anyway. So we'll definitely do that too.
I would be shocked if even, you know, you and your schoolyard pals in the stories and games you would play with each other, I would be shocked if there was the amount of inconsistency in those as there is in this movie.
Yeah, we would remember from recess to recess where things had left off.
At one point, you guys would go, no, that's a little too dumb, which is not something anybody ever said while making this movie. I guess I'll give this like a 1.5.
Yeah, you know, 2.0 maybe, because again, we are getting costumes, we're getting a bunch of characters, this fan service. Maybe I'll give it a 2.
Fun factor, are you going to have a good time? Pretty easy to rate. I'm tempted to go with a 1.5 because I feel like there are sick perverts out there who will watch this movie and enjoy it. But I'm going to give this a 1 because I did not have fun and I doubt I ever could.
You know, very early on in the film, when those bad VFX were hitting, I was chuckling a little at them.
Mm-hmm.
Before I kind of got beaten down by the experience of the rest of the movie. It's very kind of like Tim and Eric looking in a way that I could see tickling you if you're into that kind of thing.
Sure.
I did crack a smile. There was a moment that made me crack a smile, a bad line of dialogue that made me crack a smile. It's when Sonya Blade, she specifically sees Raiden's tattoo and says, wait a second, that tattoo, I've seen it before on a robot and a woman. They both tried to kill me. So I feel like if you come in this movie as a real so bad it's good aficionado, the bad effects, the bad writing, maybe you can have some fun. For that reason, I will go up to a 1.5.
The concept of a robot having a tattoo is kind of worth the 1.5 alone, I feel. I've never heard of that before, a robot getting a tattoo. Finally, we should rate the challenge. You know, the average skill level necessary to play the game or, in our case, get through the movie.
Yeah.
We don't go on a 1 to 5 skill on this. We use the challenge scale from GamePro, which is beginner, intermediate, advanced, expert, and the still elusive adjustable.
Really, the MacGuffin of this podcast is to find an adjustably difficult movie.
Yeah. Ah, I'm pulled between advanced and expert here, actually.
That's exactly what I have in my notes. I say I'm not going to pick between advanced and expert, and I'll do it in the room. That's what's in my notes right now.
Would it be an exaggeration to say that this movie has an expert level challenge?
One thing I'll say in its defense, it is 5 minutes shorter than Mortal Kombat 95.
Yeah, it didn't feel it, though.
No, I think the fact that you don't have a real first act makes it feel like the second act that never ends. You know what I mean?
Not only does it not end, a lot of stuff doesn't really conclude, even if it does eventually end. I'm going to say expert, yeah.
I was so desperate to avoid that second viewing because I so dreaded the idea of it I was successful. I managed to avoid watching Mortal Kombat Annihilation twice. So I really do think that if I had sat down for that second viewing, it would not even be a discussion. For that reason, I'm also going to give it an expert. This is a difficult movie.
Difficult film, you know? No, it wasn't difficult, oddly enough.
What wasn't?
Deciding what type of game this would be if it wasn't a game before it was a movie, but then it became a game after it was already a movie.
I love this idea. Now, in this alternate universe, does the game that you created based on the first Mortal Kombat movie exist? Or are we saying that it wasn't until Annihilation that game developers were like, we got to get in on this Mortal Kombat thing?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have any impact on this segment at all. So, you know.
Great. Arbitrary. Let's do it.
Take whatever you want. You can imagine both scenarios, because either way, I think we get a great game out of this movie.
Oh man, tell me, I can't wait.
I was struggling, you know, like going in, like, I feel like I really pulled a rabbit out of the hat, kind of reimagining the Mortal Kombat franchise as a, you know, classic SNES JRPG.
And that was some video game magic you pulled last week.
Right. And I still think that would be a great game to play. But when it comes to games I just want to sit down with and pick up, I'm really excited by the prospect of what we've got cooking up here, because I think one of the more memorable aspects of this movie, even though I believe we only see it one time, is this very interesting method of transportation.
Oh yeah,
that is introduced. You know, do you want to describe it?
Yeah, of course. We briefly mentioned it during our side table discussion about American Gladiators, but if you want to get to anywhere on Earth in a matter of hours, to quote Raiden, which, by the way, that's what an airplane is, you go into these secret tunnels that are all underground all over the world, and you step inside of this like metal ball that can hold two people, but they got to be face to face. And then it just starts flinging you through these tunnels, rolling, 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 spitting you out suddenly in a chamber that's full of lava. And one of you is like, lean hard right to get to the next tunnel. And then you lean hard right, you go through the tunnel. Assumedly, if you don't, you just smash against the wall or fall into the lava. I'm not sure.
Tell me that wouldn't be the coolest concept ever for like a Super Monkey Ball-esque game.
Oh yeah, totally. A challenge platformer.
My first thought was like, oh, maybe this is the blueprint for like the Mortal Kombat pinball machine.
Okay, yeah.
But so much more fun, I think, would be a Super Monkey Ball experience. And we don't really have too many of those, right?
You know, like a Marble Madness comes to mind as an adjacent experience. The other thing that Super Monkey Ball does not have that this could is over-the-top gore.
Oh, yeah, that would be really fucking sick. I don't know how you definitely would incorporate it. Maybe your ball could run over a bunch of dudes and, like, you could see their grizzled, torn-up entrails in your wake. You know, I imagine you would take on different, like, you know, you would get different stat boosts or upgrades or something depending on which Mortal Kombat character you put in the ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, maybe, like, Scorpion can use his, like, reach thing to pull the ball to different places or something. Who knows? But, yeah, Super Mortal Kombat ball action. Fire it up.
Let's say I'm working for Midway. It's 1997.
Yep.
I'm playing the first playable demo of this game, which they're calling Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I'm saying, surely we call this thing Orbal Combat.
There you go. It sells itself.
Great work. I got to say, for the Mortal Kombat franchise, you fucking nailed both of these. I want to play both those games for sure.
We're putting together a pretty good games library here, I think.
And our library will only continue to build as we move forward to the next video game movie. I'm assuming you still have not been spoiled on what's coming next.
I don't, but I do know for a fact that it's not Mortal Kombat 3.
That's true. This one lost enough money to avoid that hellish future for us.
I can handle whatever you're going to throw at me after, in the wake of this. Whatever you got, hit me with it.
Perhaps we'll go from groans all the way to head scratches next week, because we're skipping 1998. First of all, we're blazing through the 90s, going all the way to 1999.
Okay.
We will be watching a film based on a video game of the same title called Wing Commander.
Wing Commander. Okay, so this is the first one that I'm really not familiar with in any way, shape, or form. I've never heard of this movie, and I don't even know what this video game is. Do you know? Are you familiar with Wing Commander?
When I hear the name Wing Commander, I'm thinking like an arcade shooter where I'm playing like a World War II biplane or something.
I'm thinking about some kind of like bird life simulator where you maybe need to like move your joysticks in motion to like simulate a bird's wings flapping, which is probably a much more difficult mechanic than you would assume.
Or maybe you're a falconer who sends your bird of prey out to attack your enemies. You are a wing commander.
Falconing seems like just like a real life thing that is like rich for mining when it comes to video games, but we've never seen it for some reason.
Maybe it's Wing Commander and we'll find out next week. But for now, and for Box Office Ba-Bombs, I have been Dylan Flynn.
I have been Trevor Ickrath.
And until next time, so long, Gay Bowser.
This has been a production of
The Lighthouse Keepers Company.
Culture illuminated.